Greater Cincinnati has seen a wave of COVID infections this summer, and U.S. health officials say the virus is here to stay. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What should you expect from the latest variants of the virus, and what should you do when traveling to protect yourself from infection? Joining me now to talk about all of that and answer your questions is University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. Thanks for being here, Dr. Fichtenbaum.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Let's talk about this summer surge. We even saw cases of high-profile Olympic athletes contracting COVID, competing with COVID. What are the variants going around, and what are we seeing here locally?
Yeah, I think it comes in waves, and we're seeing this worldwide. Again, these are variants of the Omicron family. We haven't seen any switch in that family. It's a big tree, and they right now have initials, so nobody remembers what they're talking about. If you were in the military and you were ever on KP, that might be a way to remember it, because right now we're dealing with variants of KP3 and KP2. Those are the ones that seem to be emerging. And if you look every few months on the CDC's website, you'll see these beautiful color-coded charts, and they show you how a new variant is starting to emerge. That variant is gaining an advantage over another one. And the result of that is many of us get sick. And it did, in fact, affect some of our Olympic runners, and they were not able to compete at the same high level.
Yeah. And what are we seeing here locally in Greater Cincinnati? You have a chart that you showed me just before the show that shows we are seeing a lot of infections locally, aren't we?
Yeah, we've seen an uptick. And the best way for us to sort of follow this is something called wastewater testing, where we test wastewater for the genetic material, or what we call nucleic acids, of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID. And we've seen a 200% increase in wastewater testing for COVID in the Cincinnati area, which is highest in the state of Ohio right now.
Not the number one we want to be.
Right. We want to be number one in baseball, soccer, and football.
Not COVID. Right. I agree with you. So what kinds of symptoms are people seeing with these newest variants? Are there any telltale symptoms that let you know, hey, I know it's COVID? I mean, I remember the days when, you could lost your sense of smell and you thought, oh, I know that's it. Or is it more like you feel like you have a common cold now?
Yeah, I think the problem right now is that this is really, as it's changed and evolved, it's become much more like a cold. And so you feel a little bit under the weather, and most people feel like, oh, I've been doing too much. I stayed up too late. I did this work outside. It's hot. There's nothing really wrong with me. And then they start sniffling a little. Maybe they have a runny nose. Maybe they get a cough, a sore throat. And lo and behold, they test themselves, and boom, they have COVID. So it's not anything that's going to be able to be distinguished from other respiratory infections very well. You could easily have the flu. You could have an enterovirus. You could have COVID. There's lots of things circulating, and that makes it a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. We're talking about the COVID summer surge, when the new vaccine will be available, and the impact of long COVID. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Let me ask you this, Dr. Fichtenbaum, because I've had COVID several times, not recently, thank goodness, and it hit me differently each time. I guess I wonder, is that because of the changing variants, because my body's immune system reacts differently? Am I just an oddball? You can be honest with me.
Well, Lucy, yes, you are an oddball. I just want to be honest with you.
I appreciate that.
So, you know, really, we can look back over time at the great influenza. Some people call it the Spanish flu of 1918. And what we saw there was an evolution where people originally got very sick and died. They died of secondary infections, other bacterial infections. But over the course of 3 years, immunity developed throughout the society, And the flu that people were getting was very different. The symptoms were very different than they were 3 years before. Flashback to 2020, which no one wants to do, of course. COVID was very, very serious. And if we look at the number of deaths that occurred, that really peaked in 2021 with the Delta strain, where in the United States, we were seeing as many as 25,000 people dying every week. Nowadays, it's more like in the 300s to 500s, and it affects very specific age groups. So we see the highest death rates right now in those over 65 years of age. So COVID has changed quite a bit, and it's changed because our immune systems have become alert and have become much more capable of defending ourselves. Also because we develop vaccinations. Vaccinations create further immunity and allow us to deal with the more severe consequences. And of course, the virus itself continues to evolve and get variants, which frustrates people. And I also think that our expectations are a little bit off. I think what we expect is, okay, we had COVID, now it should just go away. Leave me alone. But that's not the way germs work, because like any other living thing, they just want to survive and evolve. So they're going to evolve to adapt and be able to continue to infect people so that they can continue their life cycle and survive. And we also believe that medicine is a way for us to create this shield somehow, that if I took this shot or I get this pill, I'll never get this problem. And most of our medicines don't work that way. What they do is they develop our own immune system, or they help to slow the virus down so that we can control it ourselves. And that makes a huge difference. So, for example, you know, there are very good estimates that more than 1 million lives in the United States alone were saved by vaccination, as opposed to the great influenza of 1918, when we had no vaccination and many, many young people, particularly folks serving in the military, passed away because they were living in very close conditions.
Yeah. You mentioned the fact that even though deaths from COVID are much reduced, there still are people dying from COVID in this country every week. I've read interviews with some leading CDC officials who now consider COVID endemic. So not a pandemic anymore, endemic. It's something we're going to have to learn to live with. People are still dying. Who's at greatest risk for severe disease?
Yeah, it really is the people at the extremes of age. So very, very, very young children, you know, within the first few months of life. And of course, those over 65 years of age and people who have other health conditions, people with lung diseases or heart diseases. And like many other diseases we see in our society, there are disenfranchised populations who have a disproportionate share of more severe illness. So if you are Black or Latinx or Hispanic in our society, you have a higher risk of having more complications than if you're white in our country.
And is that because of access to health care and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a number of factors. It is the social determinants of disease, so where you live, what other illnesses you have, what access you have to medicine. There are a number of different factors that make it disproportionately different based on where you live and who you are.
Let's talk about if you do test positive for COVID, as more people around here have in recent weeks. The CDC recommendations have evolved over time. What should people do now if they test positive for COVID to avoid spreading it to other people?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to recognize when you're not well. When you're not well, you know, it's kind of nice if you just stay away from other people. I know you have to live with people. I mean, most of us do. We live with other people, and it's hard to stay away from them. But you can certainly stay away from all the other people. You don't have to go to the party. You don't have to go to the school. I understand that some people have to go to work because some of the time their jobs are not always that friendly about it. I would hope someday that that will change in our society because, you know, staying away from work, school, parties, going out, that's going to help stem the spread of infectious diseases. So I think more than anything else, it's recognize I don't feel very good. And then the next thing is, can you get yourself tested, either with a home test or going to your doctor or something like that? Because knowing what you have, then it's easier for you to protect others. And right now, we know that the infection is fairly short-lived in most people, so that usually once you're starting to feel better and you had no fever for 24 or 48 hours, you're probably not contagious to other people, and you can begin to recirculate in society and start doing the similar things that you always do. I think the hardest part about this is that it really is hard and it's no one's fault. When you feel a little bit off, there can be many reasons for that. And so that is the time when people are most contagious, and it's usually the time when they're continuing their regular activities, going to visit family members, going to parties, going to work, going to school, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we are never going to stop the spread of contagious diseases because that's an unrealistic expectation. I think you really need to think about those most vulnerable people in our society. Your grandma, your grandpa, somebody else who has an immune compromised condition, they're maybe getting cancer treatment or whatever it is. I think you just want to do your best to stay away from those folks when you're not feeling right so that they don't get infected.
Yeah. Well, and I thought I had read, and tell me if I'm wrong because I could be remembering this incorrectly, that even after you've been fever-free for 24 or 48 hours, if you go back to work, for example, it's a good idea to mask for a few more days. Is that right?
So there are some people who continue to shed virus that can be spread, and that probably happens for anywhere between 2 to 5 days after you've been feeling better and you're fever-free. It is really hard to know who is and who isn't. So a prudent thing to do is if you have to go back and recirculate, it's a good idea to wear a mask for another 5 days. That way you can really be sure that if you're breathing out virus, at least you're filtering it a little bit and the amount of virus is less and perhaps you're less likely to transmit it to somebody else. And by the way, don't share your food or drink out of somebody's cup or do those kind of silly things as well.
Yeah. We got an email from Barbara. Barbara writes, I have not gotten COVID yet, knocking on wood. I have gotten vaccinated and boosted. I was also diagnosed with cancer during the pandemic. Now I'm on immunotherapy and doing well. Does this make me less vulnerable? I'm waiting for the next vaccine.
Yeah, I think that your listener is still vulnerable because they're on some sort of immunotherapy. And so that is an important factor to keep in mind. I think the best thing to do is ask your physician how vulnerable I am because it's really hard over the radio to give accurate advice.
Sure.
But in general, people who are getting some kind of immunotherapy may be at greater risk. It's a great idea to get vaccinated and boosted. And right now, I think most of us in the field are recommending that people get some sort of annual booster. We recognize that the vaccines that we developed for COVID don't give us the lasting immunity that we really want. There are more studies being done, more research. We hope to be bringing new studies to the University of Cincinnati in our community so that we can figure out how do we make the immunity a little bit more long-lasting so people don't have to get as frequent shots? We have to remember right now for influenza, we recommend a vaccination every year. It's not unreasonable to do that for COVID when you think about it because, especially for the most vulnerable, they're the ones who may have the worst effects of this. And protecting them by boosting their immunity, if we can, is probably the best way. And if the rest of us in society do that, then we help to protect others because we spread it less frequently.
Yeah. Well, we will talk more about vaccines after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss films and TV shows that make us squirm and hear arguments for why they're worth watching. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the COVID-19 summer surge, what to know about the new vaccines, and how long COVID is affecting different populations. My guest is University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Before the break, we were talking about these new COVID vaccines. I know my understanding is the vaccines are developed to try to kind of attack the whatever the latest variants are. Who is recommended to get these vaccines? Who as a physician, who do you say, hey, go out and get these when they're ready?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, I'm recommending that anyone who has a significant medical illness that might place them at greater risk. And the best way to know that is ask your doctor. But people with heart disease, lung disease, if you're too overweight, if you have diabetes, if you have an immune condition or you have cancer and your immune system has been depleted, transplant patients, these are folks that I would universally, regardless of age, recommend vaccination. Certainly those 65 years of age and older, I would recommend it. But really, I have no problem recommending it for any adult because I think that the vaccines are generally safe and they represent less of a risk compared to being infected. And the hardest part about this is you have no idea if you transmit this to somebody else and 6 degrees of separation to 5 other people who then ultimately pass it to someone else who becomes very, very ill. We never get that kind of feedback or information. So it's more of a public service and a public civic duty to think about how do I protect my community by getting vaccinated so that we can decrease the spread of the infection. We're not going to stop it, but we can decrease it.
Yeah. And you mentioned before the break that these days the COVID vaccine is similar to getting a flu shot. People are recommending you get those every year. Can you get those at the same time? If you're going in for your flu shot, can you get the COVID vaccine?
You can. At the same time? Turns out we've done some studies. It doesn't affect your immune system response. You just have a couple of sore arms instead. But I think it's a good idea to do that. And the new vaccines or studies that'll be looking at variations will come forth in the fall. And of course, they're looking at these newer Omicron variants. The FDA looks at it very, very carefully to see whether or not current vaccines offer any significant immune benefit. And should we be using some new vaccine? So there's lots of study on this, trying to figure out how we can make the immunity more long-lasting. Mm.
We got a call from Gwen, and I think Gwen's a mind reader because we were going to be talking about this. Gwen asked, what's being done to treat long COVID? Seems there's no treatment and cure. Why is this not being talked about and prioritized? And I was doing some reading in preparation for this conversation. I read a study that as many as 7% of adults in the U.S. have long COVID, and there can be lots of really terrible symptoms with that. Can you talk to us about what people are experiencing and then what's being done as far as a treatment and cure, as Gwen asks?
Yeah, so long COVID has a number of different definitions. Some of us think if your symptoms persist beyond a month or sometimes 3 months after you've had COVID, that might represent long COVID. And the most frequent things people are reporting are fatigue, brain fog, shortness of breath. They have less of an ability to actually do all the things that they want to do. And so it becomes very hard for people to function in their lives and continue their jobs, continue at school. And it can be very debilitating. Unfortunately, the short answer is we don't have a clear answer of how to fix that once it happens. We do know a few things. If you've been vaccinated, you have less of a chance of developing long COVID in the future. That is clear from a number of different epidemiologic studies worldwide, not just in the United States. Also, there are studies that are looking at different kinds of treatments, and so far we haven't found a magic bullet that cures everyone. We don't know whether this is due to our immune system being overactive or whether this is due to persistence of the virus, and it probably varies in each person. And I think finding out what your symptoms are and going to see a COVID expert and talking with them is probably the best thing I could advise your listeners to do, because there's not one single answer. The good news is that most people with long COVID symptoms over time get better, and by a year, more than 50 to 70% of people have lost most of their symptoms. Unfortunately, there are some people who have persistence of it, and so it's good to check with your doctor and see an expert to see if there's anything that can be done.
Yeah. You mentioned studies. Is there more research happening around this, or more people looking into, hey, what can we do about this?
Yeah. So the National Institute of Health is sponsoring other studies and trying to look at different kinds of compounds and medications, things that have been used to treat COVID. Your listeners may know it as Paxlovid is being tried to see whether that has any benefit in people with long COVID symptoms. There are other experimental therapies that people are looking at as well in smaller studies. So there is interest because, as you say, here in the United States, it's about 7% of adults. That's a lot of people. And interestingly enough, when you look worldwide, very similar estimates between 7 and 10% of individuals who've had COVID may experience some long COVID symptoms.
Well, I want to ask you about this too. Summer travel season isn't quite over. What precautions do you recommend people take when they're traveling?
As it turns out, I think most of the time when people are traveling, it's not so much the travel, but the destination of where they are and who they meet there. So if you are going out and you're going to parties, if you're in public settings, you may run into people who have COVID, and it's usually that close contact indoors where people get it the most. Airlines, when people are flying, the number of air exchanges that are occurring are fairly frequent. You can get COVID when you're on an airplane trip. And so if you're worried or concerned, certainly wearing a mask and limiting your contact, making sure that you're using good hand washing, not touching your eyes, nose, and face. I think, you know, when you're on a very long flight and it's 8 hours, it's really hard not to drink liquids, not to eat things. And so there is a risk, and you can try to minimize it as best you can, but you can't eliminate it completely.
I have to say, I was on a flight earlier this summer. I'm a worrywart, so I was wearing a mask, but very few people were. It doesn't seem to be a popular option right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most of us have a little bit of PTSD about the COVID pandemic and being restricted in our movements and having to wear masks. And it's sort of I want to get back to normal, and I recognize that that's really a normal human behavior, and I understand that. And we haven't really figured out in our society how do we protect other people when we're ill. And so I think certainly the people who are coughing, who are traveling and on airplanes, it'd be really nice if they were wearing masks because maybe they have to travel for work or whatever it is. But I don't think we have that culture yet worldwide. In some societies, it's very, very well accepted, but not in the United States.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking a lot about protecting others and the vaccines and everything. I get the sense that a lot of people figure, hey, I've had COVID. My body has immunities now. I don't have to worry about these vaccines anymore. It's one less thing to check off the list. What is your message about that?
Well, I wish that were true in every circumstance. I think the problem is, like winning the lottery, you never know when you pick the right numbers. And in the same way, you never know when you're going to get a particular strain of COVID or your body is in a certain way in which it's going to become more ill. As an infectious disease practitioner over the years, I've seen very young, healthy appearing people who come into our intensive care unit very, very sick. They would have never predicted it. And just by looking at them, I would have never predicted it. I think it's really hard to know. So while I would say that your listeners are probably correct in assuming most of the time they'll be okay, I just don't think you always know when that's the case.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Vice Chair for Clinical Research for Internal Medicine, Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear about movies and shows that make us squirm in our seats and why film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi says they're worth watching anyway. This is Cincinnati Edition.